order for Monday, March 31st, 2014, 6 p.m. in the New Public Library, McEntee Room. And this is one of our every fifth Monday town halls, and we try to meet throughout the city. And we thought it was perfect timing to meet here at the library with the work that has been done on the study. And Laura Swanson, our council member, who is a liaison with the library committee, suggested that this would be a good time for us to meet here.
And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. So these are our town hall guidelines. If you haven't attended one before, every attempt will be made to give everyone present the opportunity to speak. Please be considerate of the acknowledged speaker by refraining from side conversation. And while you may agree or disagree with the speaker, please refrain from audible responses and respect each speaker. Speakers will be heard in the order in which they signed in. So if you haven't, please sign in now. And then please keep comments brief and to the point as possible in order to allow time for everyone to speak. And then try not to repeat points already made by a previous speaker, but briefly state your support for a previous speaker and then add new information to express your point of view. When appropriate, we'll have staff response, council response, and other responses from the audience. Issues that cannot be addressed immediately will be noted, and follow-through will occur via the council monthly complaints and suggestions for review. And with that, welcome. And we will introduce ourselves as the city council and end with our new city manager, Spencer. So starting at that end.
I'm Councilor Mark Stanley.
Laura Swanson.
David Allen.
Sandy Rimmagoo-Mayer.
Ralph Busby.
Dick Beamer, Councilor.
And if you haven't met our new city manager,
Spencer Nemo. We do have some staff here tonight as well. We've got Jim Potiva sitting in the back, Peggy Hocker, city recorder, Mark Miranda, police chief, and then, of course, our host tonight, Ted Smith, who has had charge of this this library for a number of years now. So.
And at least one of his library staff. Yeah.
I've got two library staff. Rebecca Cohen here and Stacy Johns over in the corner over there.
Okay. So with that, I'll turn it over to you to turn it over to Ted.
Yep, I'm going to punt right to Ted.
Okay, and, Ted, it's yours.
And I'm not going to keep you all very long. I just wanted to give you a little background on how this all came to pass. It's become pretty obvious over the last couple of years that the library, we are in a period where something needed to be done or needs to be done. And knowing that the condition of the city, and we've just got a new pool. Let's all be really honest about things. That there's no way in hell, if you'll let me say it that way, that we're going to be able to build a new library on the back of a new swimming pool, especially with all the other needs that the city has that we're all very much aware of. So what we decided to do, and this is thanks to the Library Foundation. And working in partnership, but it was really the foundation that got this thing kicked off and moving, was decided to put together a plan, work with some consultants from Portland and from San Francisco to go through our building and look at our workflow and also go into the community and to develop a city or a strategic plan for our operations and our decisions on spending for the next 3 to 7 years. And the other part of it was to look at the building in its present footprint and help us identify any efficiencies that we could make out of the existing building. Sometimes we're too close to the action to actually be able to see. And so we had building consultants in here and Ruth's group that came and went through our building, watched us do our work, asked us a lot of questions. They were all over the community asking questions, and what you're going to see tonight is the result of all that. But I do again want to thank the Newport Library Foundation, because they They paid for the lion's share of this. Well, it's a three-entity partnership. The foundation has carried a good portion of that load, and I definitely especially want to thank them. And without further ado, I'll turn it over to Ruth Metz, and I'll just give you a little bit of background about Ruth. I just learned it today. She hasn't always been a consultant. She comes from, she lives in Portland, and she spent a good number of years at Multnomah County Library as the deputy director and interim director for a year. And in 2003, she retired and became a full-time consultant. And you can share, Ruth, with about the people that are in your group that make the associates for Ruth Metz Associates. And with that, Ruth, thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Thank you, and good evening, everybody. I know a lot of faces already, but I would like to formally thank you for the opportunity to work on this project here in your community and with you. It's been really a pleasure for all of us involved in this. So a little overview of our plan. Ted talked about the team, and this basically had three major elements, but all under the umbrella of strategic planning. The strategic planning process was I was the lead consultant on that. The technology review is Lucian Kress out of Portland. Facility assessment, Catherine Page of Catherine Page Associates is a San Francisco firm, and working with her is an interior designer, Brenda Katz from FFA, Architect and Interiors in Portland. And that was the team. So we started in this room. We started in this very room with a strategic planning committee. And all of the papers that you see and around the wall was work that we did in three strategic planning committee meetings. We also we met with the library board, with the library foundation, with the staff, with the management team. We had focus groups. We had a community leaders forum. We conducted interviews throughout the community. And the result of that, what we were really looking for in that process was to get a sense from this community about the vision for Newport. Not the vision for the library, the vision for Newport. And why? Because the library needs to come out of what it does, what it's trying to do, what it's trying to achieve, comes out of what is our community need and where is it headed. And so it was very interesting the sorts of things that this community thought was important. And sustainability was a big theme. These are actually charts that we did that captured the vision. So sustainability, digital literacy, sharing of resources, public transportation was another issue, an environment that's conducive to good jobs, affordable living, and quality of life. Quality of life, better education, affordability I mentioned, and the services that support families such as daycare, classes for culture, literary arts, and so forth. And those were some of the big ideas that came up, but you can also review these in more detail if you're interested, but we had some very interesting discussions throughout our process about the vision for Newport. And as a result of that, then going back to the previous slide, we went from that to therefore what should be the strategic priorities, you know, the service roles of the library in this community. And there were basically five. The library plays a big role in stimulating the imagination of the entire community. Lifelong learning, creating young readers, improving the library facility, and promotion and partnerships to advance the library and to spread the reach of the library throughout the entire community. And so we crafted out of these conversations that we had a purpose statement for the library. And it is this: to be the community center that stimulates the imagination, invites and enables lifelong learning for all ages, and creates young readers. And we also crafted out of this a vision statement for the library, and for even for Newport, but it's for the library. The library's vision for how it will be in this community and the function it will perform. And as we live in a coastal community that cares about each other, the environment, sustainability, education, and the arts, our vision is a thriving community where quality of life prevails. In addition to the purpose and the vision statement, the staff developed their statement of values. So these are organizational values. How the library intends to conduct itself as an organization, responding and reaching out to serve the current and evolving needs of a diverse and changing community, creating a sense of community, by providing a welcoming, inviting, secure environment, providing excellent customer service, developing well-trained, knowledgeable, and courteous and professional staff, communicating with the public and staff to ensure vital, relevant, and effective library services. While this process was going on throughout the community, Lucian Kress came in. He's a technology library IT guy, and his job was to do a technology review. So he looked not only at what was going on in the library, but he also talked with staff at the city, because the city and the library, the city supports the libraries, you know, as a platform essentially. And what Lucian said is that the existing technology foundation is good, is strong. He made several recommendations that had to get back to the purpose and the vision and the values, which are to increase automation and self-service so as to enable value-added services, to free staff up to do the most important things, which have to do with working with people of all ages, to adapt the public computing environment towards smaller, more portable devices. Because as you all know, technology is getting smaller and more portable. So the library needs to be, if as is so important for this community, it came through in our visioning, and these were community members. They said the library needs to be about digital, among all the other things that it does, digital learning. We want the library to be a place where people, if I'm a banker, and we had one on our strategic planning committee, I need people to be able to use the bank's technology. So there has to be a place where people can go to get the kind of training and education they need to keep up with things. The empowering staff to provide services in an ever-changing technological environment. So in the details of the strategic plan, you'll see there's a kind of, we talked about a, not a petting zoo, but a technology petting zoo, but...
It's called a technology dump, really.
Was it a dump? Yeah. I thought it was a, what was it, a technology...
A tub.
A what?
A tub.
A tub. Thank you, not a dump. Okay, technology tub.
You dump the stuff in the tub.
You dump the stuff in the tub, but in other words, that the library should spend a little bit of money to have some of the technology tools that the public is coming in with, and the public is coming in with, you know, all sorts of things. And they're trying to connect to the library. They're trying to download ebooks. They're trying to connect to online databases and resources the library has. So the staff has to be, and they really work at it, but they need a boost in order to be able to do that in terms of their technology tub. We estimated technology additions for the library, and the initial cost And this included things like RFID technology, the sorts of things that self-checkout equipment, DVD, kiosks, the sorts of things that can minimize how much staff time is going in to very routine things that could otherwise be handled through this technology. We estimated about almost $94,000 in technology upgrades. That would be kind of the initial cost, and some of those are licensed sorts of things, and so that would be an additional almost $14,000 a year to maintain those. Lucian also recommended that the library advocate for greater depth in the city's IT.
And Richard did not pay me to make that announcement.
And so that it has some flexibility, that it develops some third-party resources for when it's necessary, for when the city cannot, because of other priority issues, cannot get to what the library needs to have done. Also what was happening is a facility assessment. So Kathy Page from San Francisco and Brenda Katz from Portland teamed up to look at the facility, and it had a few parts. So first we looked at the interior space planning. We looked at short term. What can we do in the short term? Ted began his remarks by saying, we're not going to build a new library in a year. But there are some things that could be done in a makeover to make the library much more efficient, much more user-friendly, provide more people space without cutting collections by simply reorganization of existing spaces, upgrades and replacements to furniture equipment and building finishes. We used the current footprint. We didn't, no demolition involved. So that was kind of our makeover approach is sort of the real short-term thing. And that would be, we estimated about $360,000 to $380,000 to do that. The medium-term options could give you some more space in the library by doing some demolition. Not going outside the footprint of the library, but where you have office spaces, a few rooms and offices, you might be able to squeeze out a little more usable space. What we heard repeatedly from the community and the users of the library and the staff of the library, you know, your library is a wonderful library. By all measures, when I compare your circulation, the percent of cardholders, as a percentage of people who live in the service area, you have 18,000 people in the service area. Not the city, but remember, the library serves the city plus part of the county and gets some of its funding, a third, I think Ted told me, about a third of its funding comes from a county measure. And so the service population is about 18,000. You have 73% of your 18,000 people are cardholders, recent cardholders. I mean, they're using their library. It's not like they've had it for 15 years, but 2 years, Ted, is that two,
yeah,
3 years? Okay. So that's excellent. And not only that, your library is very, very good value for the dollar. For you're spending about, I think I got this right, Ted, now I'm trying, it's in the strategic plan, but I think it's $54 per capita for library services. How much do you pay for your satellite? You know, how much do you pay for your telephone, your cell phone? How much? And so for $54 per year in this community, you are providing exceptional library service to your community. There's very little I can think of that your staff isn't trying to make happen. The clear limitation in this case, and it's not true in every community, but in this community, it is the size of the library, the space limitations here. It's just not a big enough footprint to do the kinds of things people are interested in. So, moving to the next. So, what we did, therefore, was to say, okay, here's what you could do for a makeover, short term, and then let's look at what your future space needs would be. And this was one of the things the Library Foundation wanted to know. They wanted to know, so that was part of our scope of work, was to look at, well, what size do we need to be? So we looked at that. We looked at your, we used a horizon of 2035. We stuck around the same population that you're serving, your service population, 18,000, we added 500 people. We understand that the population growth is supposed to be pretty flat, so we left it there. We looked at the community's demographics. You have a, compared to some Oregon communities, you have a more educated, that is, more a higher percentage of your population has high school diplomas, has associate degrees, has bachelor's degrees, has master's degrees, and so on. You're kind of a metro, an urban area, but at the same time, you're geographically isolated. And so the library does a wonderful job now of coordinating, leveraging their services by cooperating with Tillamook Library and other libraries along the coast and in the valley, and can literally get to collections all over the world, which is wonderful. We thought about library service trends for the future, especially the increasing digital content, the influence of technology. We looked at how can the library be efficient and sustainable so that, you know, if you build a library or expand the library, that you stay relatively close to the staffing levels that you have. And so we looked at that. And then we looked at the Express Community Service priorities, this community, what they said they're looking for. And then what we did was an estimate of space for collections, seating, technology, programming space, and we came up with a total square footage, and collections includes digital collections, but it includes physical collections, because that is, as far as we know, it's still in the picture and is going to be in the picture for some time to come. So our estimate was at 22,400 to 26,500 square feet. And when we ballparked that, and literally it is a ballpark, we did a project recently in Astoria, and they're doing a renovation. And so we did an analysis of the cost for them, and this is that figure. Okay, so it's $190. It's about $190 to $255 per square feet. That pencils out to $4.3 million to $6.7 million, and that's in 2014 dollars. Now, so back at the ranch where we started the strategic planning process in this room, looked at the facility analysis, looked at the technology review, and what we developed is this strategic framework. Sort of tells the story about where the library's headed in one picture. If you look at these desired outcomes, these relate directly to the vision, the visioning in this community. People said, enhanced quality of life. This is what we want, a community that reaches its potential, digital literacy, education, foundation for a successful life for young children, and a library that works for me, and maximizing the library's reach. And so what we developed was three externally focused strategic directions: life enrichment, life skills, young minds, and two, internal. That is, my library, this is all about the facility and getting the facility, doing the makeover, doing new facility planning, integrating technology, growing the staff technology competencies, doing the dump into the tub of the technology equipment. And that's only possible through partnerships and promotions. So nobody can do this alone, but there needs to be, not necessarily in this order, but a capital campaign, advocacy network, outreach, publicity, community partnerships, and consortium. These are the investments in the center here that will help this community, and the library in particular, achieve these desired outcomes. So in summary, these five strategic directions or focus is what the library is going to work on in the next several years. And with a heavy emphasis on this, the internal, the salmon colored. Because with these up here, the library is doing a lot of this, these things that you see in investment, reading and programming spaces, but they're limited. You know, they literacy and cultural programs, Newport Reads, the big Everybody Reads program, the digital literacy, information finding, Answerland, bilingual, bicultural staff, and then Young Minds Ready to Read, their early literacy programs, their story times, their family literacy. These are things the library is doing. The staff is going to be, in their strategic plan, they have chosen to be more intentional about outcomes. What outcomes are we going to be able to show? Where are we going to direct our investment, and how are we going to know we got there? But they're pretty maxed out in that respect, and particularly if there's a makeover in the offing and a new facility in the offing and planning associated with that, then that's really where they need to be paying a great deal of attention and where they'll need a lot of community support. So in sum, this is the strategic framework that is explained in some detail with output measures and objectives and the sorts of things that the library management team will stay on top of over the next several years. Did you want to say a few words? Anybody?
Oh, I was. Did you? Are you taking
a meeting? Yes. Oh. Yes. Didn't you want to? I think this is your cue.
Yeah.
Right on cue. My name is Patty O'Hale, and I'm here on behalf of the Newport Library Foundation. And can I ask the foundation members to stand up? I think we're a major part of this audience. Dedicated to this.
Do you say their name?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Excuse me. Autumn Maloney.
Help me. Richard Havner.
Our newest member. Delighted to have her. Richard Kilbride.
Yvonne Moshon-Colora.
Sharon Dearson.
Sue Fowler.
Frances Claus.
Thank you very much. I never missed anybody. Thank you, Sandy. But I'm here to, on behalf of the Library Foundation, our president, Carol Ruggieri, is in traveling at this point. But I want to thank the council and you, Mayor Lingo, for supporting us in this great effort. We are most grateful for this, and it certainly will become the roadmap for the future of Newport's library. We are dedicated towards looking at this as a foundation we support as a 501c3, and it certainly does become a roadmap to the future. And as we all know, Newport's Public Library is indeed the cornerstone of this great community, a vibrant community. And the staff and the services provided is a tradition and well supported by this audience. But in that partnership, we hope that we can continue in sharing this partnership with the council and mayor, and that you will work with us, one, in looking at our director's budget this year, and certainly working with us as we pursue the strategic plan, looking at the first step, which would be that short-term plan, and deciding through staff, our director, and the foundation, how we can approach this to make it better for this great institution, kind of the crown jewel of Newport. So we thank you very much.
Well, thank you for all your hard work.
Sorry, Patty, that slide kind of crept up on me. Got there
me
before
too.
I was quite ready for it.
I do have one more thing to say. Since you mentioned it, my cue here. Newport Reads is we're in our ninth year of doing One Book, One Community. And this year, it's Cascade Summer. I have bookmarks with the activities. There are three: wonderful family hike on the 13th at Mike Miller Park, and then going to the community room at the OCCC for a talk by a wonderful National Parks historian on Judge Waldo. And then on the 24th, we have Bob Welch, who wrote Cascade Summer, returning to Newport to talk about his beautiful book, and also Hibbett Sam Case doing his first children's book, which is The Keyboard Kitten. And on that day, he will announce and have a big release on the second Keyboard Kitten, which was supposed to be written about Ashlyn. It's kind of an alphabet book about the cat that sits on the computer key, but as it turned out, it focuses on Newport. So the whole piece will be about Newport.
Jump to end then.
Kind of an ABC book. Very exciting news.
Thank you.
Bookmarks are on the back table.
Thank you. And then we do have an opportunity for questions here, so I wanted to come back to that. Questions? What thoughts?
The sign up sheet, if Ted, you want to get that and ask people to sign up?
Okay.
Ted, while you're walking back there,
yes.
What's the square footage of the facility now?
17,000 square feet right now. Okay. Okay.
I have just a quick question, and I already know the answer, but I think it's worth a little bit. I've heard a lot of soft things and all the stuff that happens within the structure of this building, and I support all of it, by the way. I think it's really important for a well-rounded community to have all these things, but I haven't heard the physical condition of the building. And welcome to the coast. Our weather beats everything to pieces. Every building in our city has a useful life. And has anybody, have we been able to look at the physical condition of the roof, the physical condition of all the components, and has any look been given to that? Because really, that all has a useful life and the clock is ticking.
I mean, the answer to that is
we know there's problems.
Yeah, not with Ruth's group, because you guys are more, Ruth does strategic planning, and the building consultant is inside just workflow and layout. So that part would take, and I think the city's doing its best, good job as they can with John and the crew from Public Works.
Ted, could you flip open to the section and the executive summary for the facility assessment, because that captures some of the issues. Is that what you're asking about? What are some of the issues?
I just know that all of our buildings have some level of intensive maintenance needs. All buildings on the coast do, just because the salt and the wind and the rain and the salt and rain. Right. And so I know that all buildings have problems. And I'm just wondering if we've been able to identify some of the things that are happening here and kind of a timeline, because at some point it's going to be a push as to, do you try to fix the old, or do you just say, hey, look, you know, it served its purpose, and maybe it's time to consider a different construction method altogether or something. You know, I don't know. It seems like we should know how much the useful life is left on just the roof and the walls, and we have water intrusion, and there's all kinds of things that just happen. It's nobody's fault. It's just the way it is.
And I'm going to call on Rebecca in a minute, but I just wanted to also say that we didn't look at the roof, and we didn't look at the HVAC and all of those things. It was outside the scope of our project. But our sense is, in looking at the building, that it's important. It's in good enough shape to do a makeover. Because if a new library is 6 or 7 or 8 years down the road, that, as you know, that work has to start now. There's that work has to begin now. The library is going to be very hamstrung to wait that long when a makeover will make such an enormous difference in the functionality of the existing facility. Rebecca, did you have?
Well, the roof was replaced, I believe it was about 6 years ago. And the southwest wall, which those of us who live here know that our southwest walls are the ones that they give in first. We had major work done on that within, what was that?
Last year and a half.
That was a year and a half. The HVAC system is the one major issue in this building.
And that's what we heard from staff too, is that there are how many different
furnaces? There's 12 furnaces, and at any one time, 5 to 7 of them are not working. But again, that parts of that have been dealt with in this year's, this upcoming budget, you know, we're working on.
And our makeover didn't attempt to even deal with those mechanical issues. It literally was repositioning, shelving, redoing furnishings, finishes, and so forth. Yes?
My name is Scott. There is something that I am concerned about that ties into your address. Where in any of this have you done a seismic consideration? This area is very much vulnerable to earthquakes, and I'm concerned because of the placement where you put the book stacks and when you redistributed the weight load on the floors, where you place them, where people will be sitting, other things relative to bookshelves, other things. I'm just curious whether there's any considerations for seismic events. I mean, in moderate terms, we might not necessarily have, as they say, the megaquake, but we have had significant enough earthquake effects that could disrupt the building or have other effects on within. Anybody who has a sizable book collection knows how vulnerable that is, and that kind of thing, and what can happen to the stacks, for instance. Right.
We weren't scoped to do a seismic analysis, but certainly our shelving plan brings everything down and repositions it. It makes different use of spaces so that there's actually room for the collection that doesn't go up, it comes down, making it easier for people to access. That was a big issue for the staff. The staff brought that to our attention, and library users brought that to our attention too. So again, it was a makeover, not the long term.
Scott, most of the shelving that we have in the library right now is anchored to the floor.
Because I was just noticing where some of the things were being shipped around, and I didn't know what the effects that might have on it. Because especially with the area, the overhang with the upper to the lower level.
Right, right. We're not going to be moving too many shelves that far. What Ruth alluded to was we have 90-inch shelves right now. We're going to bring those down to 50-inch. Range in some areas, so they'll have a whole lot shorter, and they won't. You know, obviously, it's easier to make a 90-inch shelf fall over than a 50-inch shelf.
And it would be secured just as they are now.
Yes. When the library was doubled in size in 2000, seismic renovations were included in that for the building as a whole.
So on page 8 of your report, you speak to developing partnerships with the local schools. I'm just curious, this issue has come up in the past. I mean, the high school, the school districts, they have their own libraries. I'm curious, and Ted maybe discussed this with the council, what kind of usage do you see either during or after school of high school students or even maybe the community college students coming to our library here in the public library and utilizing it because there might be resources here they don't have at the schools. And if that's the case, have you looked at partnering with the school districts as part of a long-term strategy so maybe you can coordinate and perhaps rather than overlapping resources, try and work together and coordinating those resources?
Well, yeah, and David, and we do partner with them now, and coordinating resources is kind of, let me put it this way. The schools aren't spending very much money on their libraries any longer, nor are they spending hardly any money on librarians. So just by virtue of the fact that they're not doing it, we are. And so the coordination work comes more from the fact that our librarians are in the schools, talking to the young people about resources at the library and how they can access those resources from home and from the school. So we're partnering in that general respect. We're not partnering in respect of
you guys do this and we'll do that, or having the schools help pay for some of that. But for the most part, public libraries are the de facto school library now.
Anything with the community college and any of their students who might want to utilize our facilities, any coordination with the community college?
Well, we just get a lot of community college students here, again, as part of the basic run of the... See, the thing about it, the big difference between public schools and community colleges is they all close at 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon and are closed on the weekends, and we're open till 9 o'clock at night, and, so we're the place to go for the students in both high school and college.
So this is another issue, and Ted, you brought this to the council's attention many times, and I didn't see anything in here, but one of the things that Ted has brought to our attention is he kind of calls the library kind of the community's living room, so to speak, and I think he uses that in kind of the terms you used it. And, especially in bad weather, Ted's mentioned there could be a high usage of either a transient or a homeless population just because they have nowhere else to go, and this is the place they can at least come to and stay dry and maybe utilize some of the facilities. And is there any part of the strategy that you're trying to look at it in accommodating those kind of populations? Because again, it's not anything that's going to go away anytime soon. So we have to at least address it and acknowledge it and see if it's part of our visioning strategy. I didn't see that in here specifically, but that's something Ted has brought to our attention over and over again.
Well, to respond to that, and then the gentleman with his hand up can respond too. The library, we've talked at length about the sorts of things the library attempts to do to manage that, so that everybody's included, but everybody feels safe and able to use the library. And this is an issue for libraries, public libraries, especially all over the country. One of the things that, and so yes, we did talk about it, and we did talk about it in the community meeting. And what came up when we had the community leaders forum and we reviewed all of this material with them, they said, look, this community needs to deal with the homeless issue. Remember, anybody else remember that, that somebody talked about that? And then we had a conversation amongst those leaders about it's a whole community issue and it's not something that the library can in and of its all on its own do, and is already probably doing what it can. Sir, you had a comment?
Yeah, I was just kind of wondering, we have all these variables floating around the room, and we have all these different goals, and we've got all these physical, improvements and upgrades. We're trying to stagger stuff up. We're talking, $6-7 million, programming issues, and bottom line is all that costs money. And I was just kind of wondering, what is in place in this area that can capture the revenue necessary to fund all this? I mean, recreation districts are all over the place because they needed to expand their boundaries to make people pay for the ball fields because they're coming from outside the taxing jurisdiction that pre-existed. But I'm just kind of wondering, has any thought been given to looking at the reach of revenue capture if, in fact, it is a regional library? Yeah, you've got your countywide district, and that's more of kind of some support stuff. Mm-hmm. But where are the dollars going to come from reliably so that these improvements can move forward with some level of confidence?
Well, I can tell you what other communities are doing. They're struggling with the same issue and with libraries and infrastructure that's aging, but services that are important. And their foundations, it's generally a partnership. They're very dependent. The cities tend to look to foundations. The foundations are in our nation more than ever are becoming very active around fundraising. So it's usually a partnership between local government, philanthropic organizations headed up by foundations, and grants. And that's pretty much how it's being put together. But people are doing it. Communities are doing it.
And one of the things Ruth spoke about tonight is that, I'm not going to be here in 10 years, but I wanted to leave the library in the absolute best shape I could for whoever comes in and takes my place. But that person can't come in
7 or 8 or 9 years and say, I want to, we need to build a new library in 3 or 4 years. A library that's going to be built in 10 years has to start being built today. And that's what the first process is, to, you know, to get the community to know that that's, it's out there. It's not going to go away. It's out there. It may be 10 years away, but that doesn't mean you can put it off till 9 years and 6 months. And so it's gotta start being incorporated into the planning processes of our library foundation and the city council and the community in general, because there's lots of, like you said, Dave, there's lots of competing issues for the very few dollars that are out there.
And that becomes the foundation's task.
But will that be enough?
We need to look at the plan. We just received this, and we can take beginning steps and set up a plan in the sense of how we're going to go about this. We have funds, but we will also require some other kind of funding. Grants would be one thing. Philanthropists.
Okay, that sounds pretty old school stuff to me.
Yeah, well, it is.
But it works. That's why it's old. But I was wondering, is there any appetite for looking at some kind of a broader taxing district that reaches the region of service, right? Much like you would like a local improvement district or you know, that kind of stuff. Is there any thought given to that, to try to capture this revenue?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly how Deschutes built its libraries, was to create districts, a library district, and at the same time to get bonds passed in all the communities in that county. Wasco County a few years ago formed a district, and that's how they're able to operate the library and do capital projects. It's a tough climate for taxes, but it's certainly possible. Tillamook is certainly considering that too, so is Astoria, because in Astoria Seaside and Warrenton libraries are all municipal libraries in Clatsop County, and there are no library services in Clatsop County, unincorporated area. And those libraries are often called upon, it's sort of like the school library, public library, they're the de facto county libraries. And they are looking at, because they want to try to serve people, that when people come in, they want to try to serve them. So they're looking at that too. But there's everybody saying pretty much the same thing, which is the taxpayer's appetite for more taxes is not good. And now Multnomah County approved a library district in November of 2012. It's the highest library district tax rate in the state. It's $1.29. I think, but you have a tradition in that county. People love their library. Well, you do too here. You have a 73% cardholder rate. That's really good. And Multnomah's, I think, is about 75, you know, somewhere in there. It's what people want, you know? I mean, it, what I mean by that is, it's about what do people want.
Okay, if we're not going to have a tax district, is the foundation and those who want to partner amongst the community, do they think they could realistically hit $6.7 million in what period of time we're talking here?
Well, I'm looking 7 to 10 years, and I don't think that they are thinking they're going to raise $6.9 million at all, Dave, but I think what they want to do is leverage what money they can raise, and especially leverage that and again, starting the educational process to get the community to find out if the community at some point in time in the next 7 to 10 years wants a major addition to this facility or a new library. And again, you know, I mean, whatever it comes down to, I mean, unfortunately, unless something changes between in the very near future, taxes are the only way that would happen, and that's not like an immediate horizon.
So Ted, I mean, the taxing district is one thing, but I mean, like you just said, the facilities, who knows, 10 years out, if the climate is right, a general obligation bond could be discussed for the actual facility itself. Mm-hmm. That doesn't get into the operational cost, but it does get into the new facility. So
You know, the taxing districts obviously is a much different discussion, but again, general obligation bonds is something the city voters and the city itself can decide upon if there's an appropriate time in the future to do so.
Yes, please.
I have a question. We're new to this area. I just was wondering if this was an emergency assembly center of any kind, and if so, if that would open up grant availability and stuff like this.
I don't know if we have that official designation, but yes, we're assuming that if there's a tsunami or something, that the library would be used as all public city facilities for whatever purpose is necessary.
Is there any way to get an official, designation to be able to access grants or something?
There may be, but those grants are going to be more. They're not going to be along the lines of they'll be for housing, cots, food, those kind of things. They wouldn't be really for the kind of things that we're trying to accomplish here.
You don't think they'd let it be used for buildings?
To build a building?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it all depends, I guess, on how creative you are as a grant writer.
We have another question.
Yes.
It's a little bit different. In your strategic planning, I know you guys are focusing more on digital media and stuff, which is great.
But
I'm just wondering if that is going to decrease the amount of books that are acquired.
Yeah.
If there's going to be a strategic decrease.
Diminishment?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No. And in large part because actually this collection is comparatively small when you look at, say, your neighbors, some of your neighbors, Tillamook's a neighbor, or you look at libraries serving a population this size in Oregon, your volumes per capita is a little low. It's not terrible. You have a high circulation, and the fact that you have neighbors that you cooperate with in Lincoln County and Tillamook, helps you leverage. So you have something like a little over 4 volumes per capita, and just by comparison, not that they're right and you're wrong, Tillamook, just by comparison, has a little over 7.
So is there a strategic plan to increase that number, or just a state?
We don't have that. We can't increase.
Can't because of the space.
People. So we're trying to live with the status quo, making more room, because what we're hearing is that people need a place to meet. We don't have enough meeting rooms. We need a place to meet. So what we're trying to do is keep our collection at or near where it's at right now, but increase it. Because since I've been here the last 5 years, we put in shelves and shelves and shelves and taken away seating and seating and seating. And we need to reestablish some of that seating and some of that space. So what we're going to try to do is keep the collection very close to where it is right now. One thing about our collection, it may be low, but it's very, very, the recency in it is very good, very high. We're not keeping books to sit on the shelf for 20 years just in case somebody might want to use it. If it hasn't been used in 10 years, it's not probably going to be found on this library. So we have newer books. The recency is important to us. We're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but we are not a last repository library, nor are we big enough to be a library that has everything. We are trying to meet as many needs as we can, but we're also all bibliophiles, so we're not going to get rid of print just because digital might be sexier.
Well, that's good to hear, because where we came from, Medford, Oregon, we did the libraries there, and they made a whole bunch more space, and it's beautiful, but nobody goes to the library anymore.
Right.
So, we hate to see that happen.
The fact that the Tillamook has the library, the number of books they have, is a real plus for us. Because two or three times in the last couple of years, I've gone up, asked for a book, said, Dr. Beamer, we don't have that here, but they have it at Tillamook. And I've got it within, 2 days on the average, Ted?
Yeah.
It's available to
us. Right. And that's wonderful.
It is.
It's
a plus for us.
And what we talked about as we all work together here, we don't think you have a lot of duplication either. Mm-hmm. So what you've done, you've got these two collections, and together they make one nice bigger collection, and then you have access to other collections throughout the state. So, I mean, that's kind of the way it should be. I'm not saying you have too few books in your collection by having four per capita. I am saying that you don't have space to have many more than that without cutting out more people space. And what we heard from people is that whether it's digital, whether it's print, or both, which is where we're going, print, is that libraries are about people. And people want, we did focus groups with some Head Start moms and with some teachers. They want to be in this library more than they can be now. Hispanic populations in this community want family space for themselves and children to bring them to the library. One woman in one of the focus groups told us this library, and I understand she volunteers for the library now, but she said, I met my first friend in this community in the public library. And I think that happens for a lot of people. Rebecca wants to get more of the little kids, the young children, into the library. There's a lot of outreach for early literacy, but then she wants to see them actually coming in. And so that means programming space. So when Ted says people want more space, it's not just to sit. But some of it is. It's to sit, it's to read quietly, but it's also to have events where you break isolation. One of the things that we know about public libraries and the function they perform in a community is they help break people's isolation. So it may be you want to come in and read quietly, but you want to read quietly in a community of people where there are other people around, and it's attractive, and you can look out over the water. And that's true whether you're a senior who's widowed and alone, or you are a single mom, who brings your own kids to the library, but then you never get any time. You don't get time as an adult there. So there, the sorts of things that we planned into the space analysis are really valid things that people in this community want. One person said, I do not want to live in a community where police, fire, and sewers are all we have. And you don't live in a community like that. You live in an artful community, this is a community where you have a better chance than most communities to get that kind of support that you're talking about. Because people will take out the checkbooks for brick and mortar. They're less apt to do it for a long-term permanent tax. They might do it for a bond. Brick and mortar gets money. Operations, not so much, Not so much.
Taxing districts are a hard sell.
Very
hard
sell.
Except for maybe fire protection districts, those are the ones that usually are most successful because people obviously want to consolidate their fire services. But other than that, Multnomah County is very unusual to that extent.
Done it when they did. Other questions or comments?
A couple of things. Dick, if you remember, the plan for the building is 20 years out, 2035. And this building, when it was originally constructed in 1985, 86, it was put on this lot with the idea that there was space. When we expanded, we doubled in size in 2000. We looked at it, and we still have room for another 7,000 to 10,000 square feet if we can add a little more land on one end. We can still build out here. This lot is not built out yet.
Rebecca, there is a long-term plan, is there not, that goes back to 1990?
Yes. Yeah, it is. I mean, I've been here since 1986, so I have seen all of the planning that goes into this. So this is not just some spur of the moment because we hired this excellent consultant team to show us our way into the future. We have been looking at this all along.
I want to just mention, too, since Rebecca referenced that 2035, so to me, your building project for a new or expanded library, whether it's new or expanded, on this footprint, on this site, would be in 7 to 8-ish years. The 2035 is the horizon for pegging the population, because as you know, when you build a facility, you have to think about what's the population now, what's the population in the future. We use a 2035 horizon because usually when you plan a library building, you plan for 20 years out. And so that's what that 2035 horizon is. I'm not suggesting you wait that long to build a new library. Our recommendation, the whole team, was do a makeover as soon as you can and simultaneously begin to plan for your expansion or new library, whatever it is, and make that about 7 to 10 years out. Yes.
Beck, I'm trying to go back to memory, but wasn't the doubling of the size in 2000 utilizing urban renewal funds?
It was.
So back in those, well, we actually had a Northside Urban Renewal District, which we closed that about 5-6 years ago. We now have a South Beach Urban Renewal District, but for many years we had a Northside Urban Renewal District, which we utilized some of the funding for the facility expansion at the library. It also built City Hall, the Recreation Center. So back then, there was another source of funding. It was taxes, but it was through urban renewal districts, which is, as you know, it's a separate way of funding things. So that was another option, perhaps in the future, if we actually have a Northside district again. So who knows what the future holds on that. So. Mm-hmm.
That'd be awesome. Other questions, Mayor? Over to you.
If there aren't, we finished in an hour and 5 minutes. I think this has been so helpful. I want to thank you for the presentation.
You will
understand it better. I sure want to thank all of you who came. If you have further questions, please let us know.
Pardon?
Yes, I should answer questions of people.
I'm just going to hang
around. Yeah, and she's going. You're going to hang around for a while?
I am.
Yeah, great. Yeah, okay, and so again, thank you for coming. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.